argument this morning is Feng Li against Gonzalez. Mr. Pollack.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Scott Pollack. I'm representing the petitioner in this case, Mr. Feng Li from China. This is an asylum matter. Mr. Li, of course, left China and came to America because he was persecuted as a Christian in China. The police raided his Christian house church. They detained, they beat him. He lost his job. He was placed under scrutiny and had to report to the police. He had to promise to stop worshiping. Since all of this treatment was due to his religious beliefs and practices, it constitutes quintessential official religious persecution. The immigration judge found his story to be incredible, and the Board of Immigration Appeals adopted and affirmed the immigration judge's decision. When you look at the eight reasons cited by the immigration judge for disbelieving Mr. Li, only two potentially go to the heart of his claim. The other reason, and those are the two that I'd like to just focus on for a couple.
I gather that this is not governed by the Real ID Act.
This is not, Your Honor. He applied before the Real ID Act, so that is inapplicable.
It looks from the docket number like he applied in an earlier lifetime, actually, but that's a different problem.
He applied shortly after arriving in the United States, Your Honor, and he filed an application for asylum. He gave his claim. When it was denied and referred to the immigration court for a relook at the case, he testified, in my view, thoroughly consistently with the asylum application. But there were certain items that troubled the immigration judge, and in our view, the immigration judge blew those items way out of proportion and actually distorted the evidence. The most troublesome one is that the passport that he used to come to the United States was dated prior to the time that he claims he was released from a period of detention. And that, of course, is of concern. It raises the question whether or not he testified truthfully about either the fact of his detention or the length of his detention. The Board of Immigration Appeals, in its decision, said, and I'll quote, "The record reflects that the respondent obtained his passport while he was allegedly detained by government officials," end quote. But the record shows that the passport was not obtained by Mr. Li himself, and it doesn't show that he obtained it before he was released from detention. Rather, he testified consistently that after he got out of detention, he had contacts. They contacted an agency that obtained his passport for him, as well as some other documents that he used to apply for his U.S. visa. And so the board's conclusion, as stated, is simply not supported by the record.
Are these documents presumably fake?
Presumably, Your Honor. The passport itself apparently was issued by some Chinese government entity that issues passports. This court, in a recent case, Zhang v. Gonzalez, from May of this year, looked into this question of false documents and passports that are issued in China, and it found that there is a huge document ring and smuggling ring in China, and corrupt officials that are more than willing to issue documents. So in this case, the immigration judge said, "You clearly were not in detention when you said you were, because your passport has a date before you say you were released." That is exactly the same situation that is described in the Zhang v. Gonzalez case. In that case, the petitioner said that he had received the passport a few days before his departure from China, yet the passport was dated some 8 or so months before he said he had gotten it. So the mere fact that...
Is there any concrete evidence in the record one way or the other about how passports are issued in China?
Unfortunately, no, Your Honor. It wasn't discussed...
Which way does that cut? Your client, of course, has the burden of persuasion, or the...
That's true, Your Honor.
Unpersuasion, more accurately.
Yeah.
If there's just no evidence in the record about how these kinds of documents are generated, Doesn't the person with the burden of persuasion have a problem?
Well, prior to Real ID, of course, testimony stands for a lot, and I think that there's no reason to doubt his testimony. If the record were devoid of other...
The reason to doubt his testimony has to do with timing.
Yes.
Right? And his response is that the way documents like this get issued makes it possible for it to be issued at a time when he's claiming to be in detention.
Well, we don't even say that it was...
One would like to know whether that's true or not, because if there's some independent evidence that that's true, it certainly corroborates what he's saying. Otherwise, the immigration judge says, well, if your defense is that I was lying in China to get these documents, why don't I believe you're still lying now?
Well, Your Honor, there's no evidence that he lied to get his passport. There is evidence that that the people who got him his passport after he was released from detention also got him some false documents that he presented as part of his visa application to the U.S. And I understand the court's concern, but we did address that specifically in our brief, and we rely on this court's decision in Dong v. Gonzalez, 421 F3rd 573 at pages 578 to 79 or 80, 578 to 89, in which there's a distinction drawn between when an asylum applicant uses false documents in order to establish an element of his asylum claim, then that is a very weighty reason to disbelieve his asylum claim. But if the false documents are used for obtaining travel documents or passage or entry to the United States, this court has said that the use of false documents to facilitate travel or gain entry does not serve to impute a lack of credibility to the petitioner. And I think we really need to take the facts in this case...
An independent holding by this court? That is, why isn't this a question on which we listen to what the agency says? That, of course, is what we held in Al-Saglati. Now, maybe the agency here didn't address this question with sufficient care.
I don't think it did, Your Honor.
We held in Al-Saglati that the agency was free to hold against an applicant the use of bogus documents.
I think it would be a very unrealistic and harsh rule, Your Honor, to say that...
The question I'm asking is, who makes the rules? I mean, normally, the Supreme Court says, if there's no concrete rule in the statute, we allow the agency to make the rule. And the Supreme Court has said more than once in these immigration cases, the agency has the authority to be harsh. So I'm interested in what rule has the agency made?
Your Honor, I really think that there's no rule out there on the use of false documents. There are two rules that depend on the circumstances and the facts of the case. The real question is whether he is believable and whether there is evidence to show that he was arrested, detained, beaten, and there is independent evidence in this record. He had a corroboration he had a witness who testified that she knew that he had been arrested and she had known him in China, yet this evidence was not considered by the board. It was overlooked by and minimized by the immigration judge, who focused on what we consider to be very minor, not even inconsistencies, because he distorted the facts to such a degree that we think that a clear reading of this record, the testimony and the evidence, shows that what Mr. Lee says happened actually happened. Your Honor, I see that my time is short. I'd like to have a little bit of time for rebuttal. So if you have no further questions, I'd like to save that time.
Certainly, Mr. Pollack. Mr. Dupre.
Good morning. Tom Dupree on behalf of the United States, and may it please the Court. The IJ's adverse credibility determination in this case is supported by substantial evidence. The IJ was well within his discretion in declining to accept the explanations that petitioner offered for the many inconsistencies and contradictions in his testimony. I'd like to begin by responding to Judge Easterbrook's question about evidence in the record concerning how the petitioner obtained his passport, which, as the court knows, was dated during the time that he was allegedly in detention. On page 154 of the administrative record, the petitioner said, quote, "I had said that they," i.e., the individuals who obtained the passport for him, "I had said that they had a way to do whatever it takes to get that. As to supposed how they did that, I would not have any clue."
Well, it means he didn't.
That doesn't sound like evidence. It sounds like a lack of evidence.
Well, I think that goes to your point, Judge Easterbrook, where you said, did the petitioner introduce evidence about how these passport individuals operate? That was the sum total of what the petitioner testified. I think that...
Isn't this something that the agency ought to have a clue on? You know, how bogus, potentially bogus passports are generated in China? We've suggested in some earlier cases that there's just a desperate need in these cases of this kind for the immigration equivalent of the vocational examiner, who might actually bring some expertise about the country to the hearing, because the immigration judge is not an expert on the country, and the alien, A, may not know very much, or B, may be lying, so you want somebody who has some knowledge and some credibility. But we've got a pretty skimpy record here.
Your points are well taken, Judge Easterbrook. I don't have much to add to that other than I think in this case the IJ acted well within his discretion in simply declining to credit the petitioner's explanation for this patent inconsistency. And I think in that respect, there is a very significant concession which appears on page 4 of the petitioner's reply brief where he says, quote, "Mr. Li, of course, would concede that the purported issuance date of the passport creates an issue of material fact as to whether or not he was in fact detained as he had testified." And I think that's significant because what it is it's a concession that reasonable people could come out different ways on this. When
that's the bottom line. That's I assume, what the IJ is doing. He's saying he doesn't believe he was incarcerated.
That's exactly right.
Because that's dispositive. It seems to me that if all this is phony, that he wasn't incarcerated, that he didn't have a church, a house church, and didn't do all these things. He just made it up because the other person that testified did get asylum, apparently. And I don't know where that case is. I'd be curious to see it. Yeah. What she had to show and what the evidence was for her for allegedly the same activity that she got asylum. And I have to go back here and I assume the IJ didn't really say it. Assume that he just, all this is phony.
Well, you're exactly right, Judge Mannion, in that...
Where am I right?
Well, the first part was exactly right, and then you had a question at the second half of your statement. So your first point about that the IJ's determination that he was not credible when he testified to being in detention because of the issue of the state of the passport, that eviscerates his claim because he was not detained, hence he was not persecuted. Your Honor is exactly right on that.
But a lot of these credibility, whatever he wants to call them, variances, are pretty trivial. There are a couple that one got to and maybe a couple of others where they do create at least a serious question. And this one, of course, overlaps with the time he's supposed to be incarcerated. And if he personally did something to get that passport at the same time, obviously that's impossible. However, if everybody knows these are fake, that's where you get them. There's some agency or whatever. You pay a lot of money to get all this stuff to get out of there. And that seems to be the way everybody gets out of China. And so one way or the other, he says if they're fake, and Judge Easterbrook was pointing out, if there's some sort of a policy that everybody knows that's the way you get out of China and the dates and what they say and everything else is irrelevant as long as they get you out of there. That's one thing. But if it proves to the IJ, or at least he can make a finding, he was in two places at once, couldn't have been, therefore I don't believe that he was ever incarcerated.
And that's a reasonable decision for the IJ to have made in this case. And let me address a point Your Honor made at the beginning where you noted that the IJ had articulated a number of reasons for the adverse credibility finding. Your Honor questioned whether all of them, in fact, went to the heart of his claim.
Yeah, like the name of the detention center.
And I would point out in that respect that in the Huang case, which was decided by this panel, in fact, and the site on that is 453 F3rd 942, this court recognized that all it takes is one supported ground to uphold an adverse credibility finding. So in other words, even if this court were to say, well, I don't think we can subscribe to or endorse all of the bases for the adverse credibility finding, as long as we have one, that in many cases can be sufficient. And I think Your Honor is correct in saying that the issue of the passport is highly relevant and very damaging and detrimental to petitioner's claim because it does go right to the heart of the issue in this case, which is whether petitioner was detained as he in fact claimed he was. I think it's also worth noting that this case, just as in the Al-Saglati case, which again was decided by this panel, you have an individual who has admitted.
It does not matter who is on the panel or who writes opinions of this court. Our opinions speak for the court as an institution.
Your point well taken, Judge Easterbrook. In that case, the court recognized that an alien who had furnished false documents to U.S. consular officials had undercut his credibility generally. And in this case, we have an individual.
No, that's not what Al-Saglati said. Al-Saglati said that it was within the agency's discretion to conclude that somebody who lied in order to obtain a visa was still lying. It's not that we were making a decision that he was not credible. The substantial evidence standard applies, and the agency makes the decision.
That's a fair characterization, Judge Easterbrook. But this court affirmed the agency's determination in that respect, where you had an individual, as in this case, who had concocted what was a fairly elaborate story that included the preparation of false documents about his income, about whether or not he had a job, about whether or not he had relatives in the United States. And again,
by the way, when he reached the United States and applied for asylum, was he given work authorization?
I don't know if the record speaks to that, although I would assume the answer is yes. But I can't say for sure because I don't believe there's anything in the record on that, Judge Easterbrook.
Well, and that's the reason he gave for not going to church all the time, which seemed to bother the IJ. Because he was working in other places.
Leads to the question whether he was authorized to work in the first place.
Well, it's a fair question, but again, since I'm not aware of anything in the record that speaks to that, I don't want to make any representations on that front. And let me make one final comment with regard to the issue of his church attendance, because I know that the petitioner has made much of this in the brief to suggest that the IJ's questions were somehow improper. The fact is that it was the petitioner's counsel who, during the removal hearing, raised the issue of petitioner's church attendance to show, and this is what the petitioner's counsel characterized it, to establish the genuineness of his belief. That appears at page 110 of the administrative record. And so I think that in this case, the IJ was simply taking the petitioner's claims on his own terms when he tried to inject into this case the fact that he was, or allegedly was, a regular church attendee to establish the genuineness of his claims. The IJ was doing nothing more than simply saying, well, fine, accepting that as the church attendance as a proxy for genuineness of beliefs, how come you don't attend church? So that was the reason the IJ asked that line of questions.
Historically, I think using church attendance as a proxy for a sincerity of belief is probably a very bad proxy.
And that's why I wanted to clarify the issue, Judge Easterbrook. I know that the petitioner had hammered that point in his brief, and so I just wanted to make sure the court was aware of the context in which that comment was made and that it followed the petitioner's counsel raising that issue and making that argument to prove the genuineness of his belief. That's
counsel,
why it was made.
Which discrepancies in the petitioner's testimony in which he relied upon by the judge that were material to the claim. What particular testimony?
The passport issue, the date of the issuance of the passport.
Right, and the religion? Anything else?
There were others. I do believe.
Well, what ones are you relying on?
We are relying on the passport issue, the detention center issue, the fact that he the name of the detention center, the fact that the petitioner was unable to, prepared and submitted false documents to U.S. consular officials. I think the church attendance is another issue that undercut his credibility. I think the fact that the petitioner changed his testimony as to whether his wife was employed in China or whether
she... Well, now you're going through all of them.
We're asserting all of them.
Which were the key ones?
Well, the key ones, I think, were the passport issue, the submission of false documents to U.S. consular officials issue, and the name of the detention center issue. The reason why I wanted to articulate all of them is because in response to Judge Mannion's earlier question, this court need not uphold every single one in order to affirm. But I did not want to in any sense abandon or waive any, because I think that all of those are legitimate bases, although of course we could win on the passport issue alone.
Right.
Unless there are further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Dupre.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Pollack? You probably have about 30 seconds.
Your Honor, without the immigration judges or the boards commenting on Mr. Lee's explanation for the passport, their conclusions are pure speculation. That's all that they are in this case. They didn't make a judgment that he was lying per se, and the issue of the date of the passport goes not just to the fact of his incarceration, but to the period. He may have been he testified credibly. If you read his testimony, it's consistent with his application. But even if he were to, even if you were to think that somehow he got that passport before, there's other evidence to show that he was actually arrested, detained, beaten for his religious beliefs. There was an eyewitness showing that he was a practicing Christian in China, and you can't dismiss that evidence as the immigration judge and the board did. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess.